when they went to go make that and then didn't put it on there, don't you think they would have known to just check, because that's really uncommon?
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, BLML Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey everybody.
And Adam Camilleri.
Oh hey.
What up?
Man, been a good week. Good week of 40K. I know a lot of people's 40K years are coming to a close. Over the holidays, people are like licking their chops about what goodness they might get under their Christmas tree, what new armies Santa might bring to their doorstep.
People going to be practicing for the LVO coming up.
That too. Well, there's a lot of end of season events. Thursday show, like this week, there's two 150 plus player team events happening in Spain, which I feel like is like their end of year send off. They have big team events. Australia has Uprising, which is our kind of LVO equivalent, our kind of big 3-dayer, 200 plus player event. And then, yeah, we're wrapping up the end of the ITC season with LVO at the end of January.
Yeah, it's going to be so cool. This past weekend, I was at PAX Unplugged. I know we mentioned that on the last episode.
Yeah. What's that?
I was great, actually. It's so I may have said this before, but PAX Unplugged is kind of like a mini Gen Con type style event.
Okay.
To where there are lots of vendors with lots of mostly board games. And instead of where Gen Con, things aren't ticketed events, or everything at Gen Con is some kind of a ticketed event. Some of those tickets can be $0, but you have to go and get a ticket to participate in a lot of things. That's how they kind of track activity. Most other cons I've been to do not have something like that. PAX Unplug mm-hmm. included. So, people could just roll up and do demos of things and be a part of stuff. And it's cool. Probably about half as many people have had to guess at Philadelphia for PAX Unplugged than at Gen Con, but still a lot of people.
Nice.
And, yeah, I was in the GW booth running Blood Bowl demos, which was very interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. Is that very interesting in like air quotes?
No. So Blood Bowl has been out for a long time. And
yeah, correct.
It's pretty much the same game that it was then as it is now.
Why would you improve on perfection? There's nowhere to go.
Completely agree. But also, it's if you played the video games that are out there, it's also the same game.
Yeah, once again, I refer to my previous statement.
Yeah. The video game's almost a direct port from the board game. I mean, yeah, it was just absolutely awesome. Great going. I've been on record as saying it's one of the best games. I was even saying it over the course of the weekend. It's probably the best game in the building. It's an amazing game, especially for 1v1. And it also has tons of replayability. The fact that you can break it out like a board game, or play it like a story mode with seasons.
Yeah, exactly right.
So doing that. So the reason I say it was interesting is because people would come up, longtime players or players of the video games, like, oh, I had this video game. How does this game work? And I'm like, well, exactly like the video game, but I'm going to walk you through it. And they're like,
just in case.
This is exactly like it was. Again, which is cool. But the game being out, basically in its form, I mean, granted, there's Dungeon Bowl and Deathmatch, and the teams have changed, over the years, but the core of the game is still very much the same. And so, people were really keen to share their stories about how they've experienced it over the years, and I was very keen to listen. So, no air quotes, it was absolutely cool to listen and be there, and then demo Blood Bowl to some new folks. Like, there was people picked up some starter sets, people didn't realize that maybe there was quite as many teams out that there were, and so they get a new team or whatever. And several people, like, they'd come in after they did the initial demo, they'd get the game, they'd go back to either the open gaming area or their room and read the rules, and then come back and ask me questions about the rules, kind of thing, about how to resolve certain situations or how they can get better on the spot. Also happy to do that.
Damn, nice. There is something to be said about a venerable game by Blood Bowl just standing the test of time. Like, you can't say for Age of Sigmar, you can't say for Oh, for Kill Team, you can't say for 40K. You can't say for, you know, most tabletop miniatures games out there where you can stop playing the game for a decade, come back, and it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
There is something to be said by that. Like, that pick up and play ability. Like, once you learn Blood Bowl, you're good. You could be, you know, in a retirement village, rock up, someone's, you know, playing with their Black Orc, and you're like, ha, cheesy. And it's the same Black Orc, you know, it's the same rules. It's amazing.
So I do have to confess that the, like, the big guy, the troll that comes in the second edition box set, couldn't find the troll. So I just kind of scooched the ogre over on the side of the orcs because it helped me do a better illustration of, like, the opening plays.
Yep.
With strength and stuff. And, you know, and there was a, don't worry, someone pointed it out that I was wrong. So all is right in the gaming universe.
Did you have to play like Knifey Spoony? Like, that's not a troll.
But again, had a super incredibly good time, and it was cool to see those people kind of get exposed to it. Kill Team was rocking and rolling, man. Like that demo booth table, and I actually did Kill Team demos at Gen Con, so I know how awesome that is. And Kill Team booth was, you know, did not disappoint, rocking and rolling. Lots of happy people up there playing Kill Team right next to me. You know, so fantastic. It was cool. Yeah, we had two demos. We were demoing mostly Kill Team and Blood Bowl over the course of the weekend, plus the whole like booth there was there. So all, you know, the limited edition stuff that you can only get at events was also there. So it was cool. And then we had the privilege of being right next to the paint and take activity, where people could come through the paint and take. They got a miniature, they got instruction from just some of the best painters in the industry, Kat and Caleb, who are there also with the U.S. Open Series roadshow classes. Mm-hmm. So teach people how to paint. And then there was a fair number of people that would immediately leave that paint and take, come over, and then want to get a miniature, and then want to get paints to paint their miniature.
It's awesome.
The system works.
Yes, but I don't know that was the intent. I think the intent was just to have a cool activity, and some people got so inspired, you know, a lot probably because you're holding a cool model in your hand and painting it and seeing yourself do something. And then also the instruction people over there, you know, giving, you know, probably some good tips, some tips I think we probably all wished we could have when we first got started.
Yeah. I mean, you and I have both gone on record saying, you know, 15 odd years ago when we started, you had to like beg, borrow, steal to learn to be taught, you know, like wet blending, dry brushing.
What's a dry brush?
Glazing. Yeah, exactly.
I feel really blessed because my husband had already been painting for almost 20 years by the time that I even found out what Warhammer is. So I was like, I want to paint a model. And he's like, okay, this is a wash. This is dry brush. This is how you thin your paints. This is the difference between like a base and a layer paint. Off you go. It was pretty amazing. And it made my learning process a lot faster because of it.
Very nice.
I am jealous.
Yeah, same. Well, these folks would come over. And so my demo area was right next to the paints too. So people, I had tons of questions. Like, and this is a real question. I want to paint this Dread Knight. What colors do I need?
Silver.
Lead belt.
Man, you'd be kicking back being like, ha, feet on the table. I can sort this.
Well, nothing. You know, there's one of those things is like, there is a Grey Knight silver.
Yeah. Actually says, find the one that says the name of the thing you want to paint on.
But that's not what I said. You know, of course, I mean, yeah, I didn't say like, oh, you know, look, just find this. You know, it's like you're gonna want probably to base this with Lead Belcher. You got to have a prime, by the way. Number one, prime it. Believe me, you're going to want to prime it. You have to prime it. Don't not prime it. And then put on this Lead Belcher. And then here we can get washes. He's like, what's a wash? I'm like, oh, my man.
Did you call it liquid talent? Yeah. This time you said it was liquid talent.
Yeah, I did not, at least in this example, but, you know, did illustrate that, you know, there are some washes you want to paint all over, some washes you want to paint just in the recesses, you know. When you break out this instruction sheet, you're probably going to get a list of colors too to use, but, you know, how they did this color here is not just a top coat. There's a base coat and then a top coat, which gives you some depth. The wash helps give you more depth. And then you're off to the races. You know? So there was, again, a ton of people that were real enthusiastic about getting models that, you know, they'd be like, yo, what colors would you use for wood? Now, look, I did not represent that I was an amazing painter either. You know, just more of like, I'm also kind of just know that there's a system here, is that you have a base color, then you've got a layer on top of that. And if you're, you know, feeling particularly inspired, you might want to edge highlight. And there's a couple different ways you can do that, either by getting a lighter color, or maybe, you know, darkening your whole thing with a wash and then using your original color.
Mm-hmm. I do like want you to meme out one day, and no matter what people ask for, you just give them a can of Mephiston Red.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what they ask for.
Oh, so you're going to want to start with Mephiston Red.
So I want to play this orc army. Yeah, Mephiston Red. Tyrion's Mephiston Red. Knights Mephiston Red.
But seeing just like brand new people to the hobby, I mean, I'm talking like brand new, like they're not miniature wargamers. I don't know that they will intend to be miniature wargamers, but they were inspired by what they saw to come and do some painting on the best models in the industry. So that was neat.
Well said.
Yeah. And then, you know, did that for 3 days.
Speaking of the best models in the industry, did you know that the model of the year voting is out now?
Ooh, what are the options?
Oh, everything. Everything that came out this year is an option, and I've already voted, and I voted one of the... Oh, which one was it? Why can't I remember the name of it? It was one of the Horse Heresy tanks.
The brand new one?
It used to be a resin kit, and then they made it into
the Sakaaran.
The Sakaaran, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I voted for that one.
That's fair. That is a good choice.
That's a very good tank. That tank has always been just real hot looking.
It's just really nice looking. And now that it's plastic, it's tempting, because I never really bought the resin one because I was like, there's a lot of like flat sides. And sometimes that resin comes warped.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, the Avatar came out in March. That's the one.
That's the one for you?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had to take a tank, right?
No, there's no wrong choices. You got to go with what you feel, right? So.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested.
Jumping on right now.
Sorry, I'm actually really interested to see what's going to win, because it was really difficult to pick this year. And, you know, like, I feel like in years past, there's been like a big model that they've released that everybody was like, ooh. But I feel like they just released so much cool stuff that nothing really jumped out as being like the one that's probably going to win.
Well, oh, yeah, exactly right. And in years gone past, we've had a Primarch, you know, a Grandois centerpiece model that with huge amounts of lore that's never had a model, you know, since the second edition, like Magnus, like, you know, Mortarion, etc. This, and last year it was Bellicor, I think, won, if I remember right.
I think you are right.
Yeah. And so this year, I suppose the Avatar would be an equivalent there, right? Of a, you know, a venerable centerpiece model getting its due update.
I feel like it's probably the one that has the most lore behind it. I'm not looking at the master list, though. But it does tend to be models that have a lot of established lore that tend to win model of the year. So that's maybe a good pick.
Yeah, Mortarion was 2017.
Mm-hmm. It's wild to think it's that old. So, eligible votes. It's 2016. Yeah, 2016 was Magnus. Mortarion 2017. Noise Marine, sweet licking Noise Marine 2018. 2019 was the new Abaddon. 2020 was Gaz. And 2021 is Bellicor. So, it is like these large, except for the Noise Marine. He's kind of the aberration. It is like the head of a faction.
His Grand presence leader is bigger.
It, you know. Correct. Shines brighter due to being more diminutive. But there are a lot to vote from. Wow.
Yeah. So when you go to vote, it's not just the pictures for the month. It's actually a whole list of probably all the models.
It feels like it's like listed in chronological order of when it was released.
Old Zephon Blood Angel model. That's, I got to resist.
There is some excellent stuff here. They've put all the terrain pieces on here as well. I mean, I think I'm voting for the Avatar of Kane, but I'm going to look at all my choices first.
Well, scroll down. I mean, and also, if you're not familiar with some of the Warcry models and everything, maybe check them out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they won't speak to you the way that the Avatar of Kane probably does. But, you know, in those, the box games or the skirmish level games, they're still knocking it out of the park with each and every one of those figures. And, you know, you couldn't tell they were a standalone game.
It's true. It is.
It'll be interesting to see if something other than a Warhammer 40K model gets it this time around.
That's right, isn't it? It's only been 40K models that have won these things.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see if maybe Horus Heresy takes it, or maybe even Warcry or anything.
Is Bellacor a tweener? Bellacor can be played in AOS, right?
100%. He can, yeah.
So
Bellacor is the one that's the only one that spans both.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good Sigmar models too.
Do you know what's actually kind of getting me is the new and maybe it's recency bias, but in November the brand new Chaos Demon Prince model came out, and for variety of incredible options, like there's no wrong way to build that thing. It just looks phenomenal, no matter how you cut it. That might get my vote.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking now. There's a bunch of Sylvanas stuff on the list. And yep, also great models. God, there is a ton to choose from.
Are they the gossamer? What are they called? Those like dragonfly things are actually pretty sweet.
No, I saw my buddy paint one of those on I can't remember if it's an Instagram live or Twitter video, and it's like, man, those models are canvases.
I found my vote. Emperor's Champion, Bayard's Revenge. Done.
Done and dusted.
Yeah. Competition's over. Every other choice is incorrect.
There we go. Just give him the medal.
It's got nostalgia points, though. Like, the model might not be as grandiose or as magnificent as others, but it's perfectly positioned, and it's got me by the heartstrings.
I can't vote for it because it's an orc getting slain. I can't do it.
That's true. That's
my
true.
Boys.
He's just taking a breather.
So here's the thing that I envision somebody doing, because we know there's an Angron model coming out. And I literally just thought of this now. I want somebody to you know the OG evocative showdown between Horus and the Emperor with the Sanguinius, you know, lying broken on the stairs from freaking, you know, nigh on 25 years ago now. I want someone to recreate that, but it's Gaz versus Angron with Yarrick on the stairs.
I feel like that is like your Christmas break project.
Oh, my Lord. That would be, I mean, make it Armageddon-like, not on the stairs of the vengeful spirit, but someone recreate it. Someone better than me. I want to see that at Adepticon. At the Golden Demon Awards this year.
Yarrick is just like splayed out on a Bane blade.
That's right. I want to do the Dylan, you son of a predator handshake with whoever did it and put it up there. Yeah, make it happen, somebody. I won't do it justice.
Yeah, get one of those dream projects in your head. Only way to get it out.
Well, only way for that to be created is if I put it in someone else's head. Yeah. Lord knows it's beyond me.
We had one of those on the show a long time ago. The also included Yarrick.
Yeah.
The Ogryn launcher. This is back when the only way to, like, we theorized the only way to make Ogryn good were if you found some way to catapult them into combat. And it was actually mounted a catapult on the back of a Stormlord and to fling Ogryn at people.
I mean, yeah, why not?
Do they have like giant goggles? I was going to say, do they have little goggles on? But they're Ogryn, so they have
regular size goggles because that's all they had at the, you know, the quartermaster.
They're just like cutting into the fat on the side of their head.
Well, if they didn't, they do now.
a mythos is being created right now. Honestly, you could probably do that with Kriegsmen, like just a Krieg on a catapult with a shovel,
and giving the thumbs up.
They would literally line up for it. They'd be like, sick. this is the highlight right here. Highlight Vicious. Of my life.
Yeah, there we go. There you go. We start talking about the hobby. We start talking about miniatures that don't have anything to do with gameless, where it gets us pretty soon. Somebody's going to be building. Oh, that's awesome. Now, going back to PAX Unplugged, it was very cool to hang out with all those gamers. I have one complaint over the entire weekend is that I ordered a cheesesteak and it showed up with no cheese on it. And that's like,
it's just a steak.
Like a punch in the gut in Philly. That was
Who orders a cheesesteak with no cheese?
That's actually, believe it or not, what my wife said. She's like, when they went to go make that and then didn't put it on there, don't you think they would have known to check, because that's really uncommon?
Like, wouldn't you just get like a steak sandwich or something?
Yeah. Instead? It was pretty good, but, you know, didn't have the cheese on it.
It's literally, what's the rule called for the Blood Angels where they had the visions?
Oh, yeah. I'm in Iraq. And I know I saw it be ordered, like physically. I know cheese was selected.
Okay. And then they place, you open up your, you take a bite. There's no cheese in the bite. And you look down and all you see is Horace. The Black Rage has taken you.
That's it. But I had a great time. They were actually had their Christmas activities going on in the city. They might do it every weekend, but there was actually a Christmas parade this weekend.
Nice.
One of the differences between like PAX East and Gen Con is that in downtown Indianapolis, where Gen Con is, that whole place is just Gen Con. PAX East isn't there yet. Like, no one else in Philadelphia knows that PAX is going on, even though, you know, there's 40, 50,000 people there.
Huh.
So they also had a Christmas parade. So we're like, when we're walking back to the hotel, it's almost like a Hallmark movie. You know, you're walking through these little Christmas tents and parade going on and stuff like that.
That sounds pretty cute.
It was cool. Yeah. Thankfully the weather participated. It was, it only rained one day.
So small tangent, in my small town, they actually did film a Hallmark movie once, and it was a Christmas Hallmark movie, but it was, I swear, the middle of summer. So it's like 40 degrees outside, which is really hot, Paul. And
the centigrade, right? Is it?
Yeah, it's really hot, and there's all these poor actors out there wearing like parkas and mittens and sipping on hot tea, and you're just feeling so bad for them because you know they're not having a good time.
When you said 40 degrees, I'm like, that's kind of chilly.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
That's really hot.
No, I can see. What is that, like 80 Fahrenheit?
I think it's in the hundreds.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's definitely like high 90s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Acting.
Acting. Yeah. Yeah, it was really, I felt really bad for them, but I mean.
104.
Wow.
104 Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet they were all like, I'm not getting paid enough for this.
No, I'm sure. Whew. It's not good.
Nope, not good at all.
How cold?
Yeah.
Oh, well, here we go. I guess we should talk about some 40K.
Oh.
You might have missed the question. How hot? What's the hottest it gets in Atlanta, Georgia?
That would be the top end.
Would be about 104.
Yeah, that would be like the hottest it gets mostly. Now, but it doesn't get that where. But we are in the 90s regularly and cross. This is like in the height of the summer, not all the time. We get all the seasons here, so it'll get pretty cold in the winter. I'm talking like in the teens or below freezing in the winter sometimes, and then up to the 90s and 100, very, very incredibly low hundreds in the summer.
Damn. Okay.
But most of the time it's like 72 degrees.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. That's kind of perfect.
Yeah. Not like California 72 degrees. I mean, I say most of the time. For like two of the months, it's not. Super hot or super cold. It's pretty good.
Nice. I'm coming to visit.
You'll love it here. It's absolutely awesome. So yeah, with Warhammer, Adam, you actually got to play the new guard.
I did. Yeah. I had a game on stream. The stream's called Risky Rollers, if anyone wants to look it up and check it out. But it was a bit daunting first game with a new book on stream. But man, it was just like riding a bike. It was just muscle memory still covers, you know, so many of the mechanics of that army. Because I haven't actually played guard in 9th edition, but it's still all the basic stuff. The guardsmen are there to do this. The battle tanks are there to do this. The transported units are there to do this. It really, like, I feel like I might be a bit of a generalization to say that's been pretty much the same modus operandi for guard since like 5th. Since the leaf blower was a thing, if anybody remembers that. But it's pretty similar, just kind of you get to it in a different way. It was the interesting thing was it's much more of a chess setup now than a kind of, and that's, I'm referring to orders, where you have to do your orders in your command phase. So by the end of your turn, you need to have set up your orders for the next turn, otherwise your bastard, you won't get them. They'll be, you know, he'd be, your officer's just going to be screaming into the wind and nobody's going to move or shoot better.
Yeah, I mean, so, what do you mean by that as far as like setting up your orders and the...
Well, so your orders happen in the command phase, so you don't get to move into order range. So you issue your orders, and then you have your movement phase. And by the end of that movement phase, or unless you can fix it with a charge phase or whatever, you have to be able to do orders again next turn. And I found that the hardest thing to get my head around was that at the end of every movement phase, my orders need to be in range again. Now, there's a lot of things that are really good to help you get around that. Like the first foremost being the fact that Vox casters are free on everything. So essentially everything has a Vox caster. So you can order, you know, a 24 inches for most of the regimental stuff. But yeah, I found that was the hardest one to get my head around, how differently I have to do that mechanic. Because it used to be like the officer could order themselves to double move over to
move
issue
and then move yourself.
And then to issue another order to move another guy, or to first rank, second rank, or to plug a hole in your screening or whatever. And it was really quite flexible in that way. And I suppose they've taken a little bit of that away. But the fact is we have like twice as many orders now. It's a full six mechanized orders, and then you have the full prefectus orders in addition, which are extremely powerful. I found Kate, of course, I was playing Kate, a lot of Kate in infantry, and I was playing them as born soldiers. So that was the sixes to hit auto wound. And then if you are
That's the basic or the standard one, which I think is great.
It's the default. So what that gives you is, army wide sixes to hit auto wound, and then your officers bubble out their leadership to nearby squads, which we all know for guardsmen, there's nothing worse than losing three guys and then losing three more guys to morale. But it gives you a bit of redundancy there to make the morale phase a bit better. But I realized Cadian guardsmen, six is to hit auto wound because you're born soldiers, and explode because that's their special rule, that their las guns explode on sixes to hit. And I was playing against demons, and there was a wound gated bloodthirster that I killed with las guns. And I felt like such a baller. Wow. I was like, yes, this is what it's all about. The combined might of these absolute plebeians taking on the world, taking on the galaxy's horrors. You know, this literal avatar of the god of blood, death, and murder. And Barry, with his flashlight, he's going to mess him right up.
Showing no fear.
It's so good. Exactly right. It felt so good. I was also, in 8th edition, I was the guy who would shoot Mortarian, Imperial Knights with all my first rank, second rank. I mean, I'd have like a Lehman Russ Executioner or Battle Tank at the back of the board. And then if you only had like one or two wounds left, I'd first rank, second rank into you, just to see if I got you with the Knight for the morale debuff. It would apply to the player. Nothing more nothing as shameful. my word is not good. Nothing as shameful to the wielder of the Imperial Knight to be literally gunned down by guardsmen.
I love the sound of that.
It was very fun. I took a big unit of Bulgrin. I don't have any Rough Riders, you know, shame on me. Still waiting for all those wonderful people who are going to send me their Talaran Camel Riders, you know, for free, obviously, because they're definitely not worth anything on eBay. So I played a big unit of Bulgrin. I got to say, versus demons, where their low amount of Ren doesn't matter that much, they still felt very strong. And I took a Commissar with them as well, because the Commissar gets to give them orders, which also felt phenomenally thematic, to have a Commissar, you know, with his 10 Bulgrin, nine Bulgrin, just yelling at them, telling them what to do, making them OBSEC, making them deny deep strikes. That felt like a really cool package. And yeah, they were actually a really big pain in my opponent. Sorry for swearing.
What was your HQ loadout, like all of the and also your detachment configuration?
A single battalion. I do believe that Guard has a really strong suite of stratagems, as we like to call it, and so you really want to start the game with some CP. I believe I started with 3 CP, or was it 4? I think it might have been 4 CP. I had a tank commander in a Lehman Russ battle tank, which I'd upgraded to have the gatekeeper super battle cannon on the front, which is the D3 plus 6, so min 7 shots at strength 9, AP 3, 3 damage. It is chef's kiss, really, really good. And then I had a Cadian command squad, I had a Malta gun, the Medipack, the regimental standard. I've upgraded the regimental standard to be the finial of the Nemedeshi first, which means I pick a unit in the command phase, and that unit ignores all hit modifiers, and they ignore any rules that would allow the targeted unit that they've done damage to ignore failed wounds, so ignore wounds. So they can't use feel no pain, and you can't use wound gating. So that was really quite pivotal. And then lastly, I had a Cadian commander, just a single Cadian commander, and his purpose was to sit in my Chimera so that I could get an order with more flexibility. So the way if you put a commander or something that can issue orders inside a transport, when they disembark from the transport, they can issue an order. So that was the way I was kind of trying to plug my holes, thinking I wouldn't be really comfortable with the new mechanic in the command phase. That one guy would allow me to have that flexibility again,
where I could scoot and then jump.
Exactly. I could jump that guy out, advance them off the disembark, and then issue the order. And so, yeah, that gave me that flexibility as well. Then I think I took five squads of Cadian infantry, each one with a Vox caster, two plasma guns, and the new auto barrel las gun, which is just like a force. It's just like a storm bolter, but it's a las gun profile. And
oh, you took those then, on the sergeants, I guess, is it?
Yeah, on the sergeants. I'm actually a pretty big fan of them. Just another four las gun shots.
Yeah. Right, I can't get those on Catagen squad, so I don't think I'll be using them.
Yeah, but you guys have the Flamers, and the Flamers are not too shabby either. Then I took two units of Cassican. One unit was heirloom weapons, so it's extra +4 inches on all your ranged weapons. And I took that unit with two Flamers and two Melter guns. So 16-inch range on the Melter guns, and you get to use you get to deploy 12 inches away and still use your Flamers rather than having to be like right in the jaws of death, which is, you know, kind of what I use that for. Then the other squad was what I think is the best loadout. That first one was an experiment. The second one was geared up to be mechanized, and they had two hotshot volley guns and two plasma guns. For those who don't know, Cassican get to take another trait. So they're the born soldiers, so they're 6 to hit auto wound, and they get the leadership from the commanders. But they also get to pick another trait from the suite of traits. And I picked one of them to be the airling weapons, like I said, with the +4-inch range on all their guns. And the other one was picked to be mechanized. And the mechanized meant that they went in the Chimera with the company commander, and that they could move, they could disembark from the Chimera after it moved. So essentially it means you get to wrap that unit in a metal box, and then they get to get out essentially rather than just moving 6, because you move 12 inches on the Chimera, and then they disembark 3.
That's pretty nice.
You want me to keep going?
I actually want to talk about the Castrican, because they get the Meltamine keyword, the only place I found it in the book.
It's true, they do, yeah.
Which, you know, keys off the vicious traps stratagem, which is Catechin and Castrican. Sure, yep. They sound similar, but I wouldn't put them in the same thing together, except, you know, maybe so, because the vicious traps here is a user stratagem in your opponent's charge phase. When an enemy unit finishes a charge move with an engagement range of one or more Astromilitarum units from your army that are wholly within an area terrain feature, roll 1d6 and apply the following modifiers. +1 if any of those units from your army have the Catechin or Veteran Guerrillas keyword. +1 if any of those units from your army have the Melta Mine keyword. +1 if your army includes Sly Marbo and he's on the battlefield. On a 2-5, the enemy unit suffers D3 mortal wounds. On a 6+, the enemy unit suffers 2 D3 mortal wounds.
I like it.
That's 1 CP.
Yep. Anything that keys off of Marbo is just... it's just a good time.
Well, it gives a +1. You know, so you could, if you have, you know, Castrican and Marbo, or Catechin and Marbo on the field, you're looking for a 4+ for that to key off on the 2d3 mortal wounds.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's actually, so one thing about this book is that outside of hotshot weapons being out, you know, with 6 to hit, do mortal wounds from a stratagem, there actually aren't that many mortal wounds in this book. So having a little access to some splash like that is pretty key. Is pretty nice.
I just like it. You know, I plan on having a super heavy and utilizing some orders on super heavies and that kind of stuff. But they're going to be surrounded by Catechin. It's like you know you're going to bleed coming through here. I'm looking forward to using that every turn. If you're curious about where my CP are going to be spent, look no further than vicious traps.
Awesome.
So did you have more to the list?
Yeah, so yeah, like I said, I had the Commissar, who doesn't take up a 4-sorg slot if you've got a command squad, I believe. And then I had my 9 Bulgrin. Then I actually took I one unit of three armored sentinels, one unit of two armored sentinels, and a hellhound. Mostly because the hellhound is my favorite tank.
Yeah.
It always has been, always shall be. I just love it so much. But the armored sentinels, I genuinely wanted to test them out because for the points, I think you get a lot of durability. Like, you do actually get a lot for the points, whether it's scout sentinels or armored. I think I've said this already on here, but I think they're very good value for the points. And then lastly, I had two Lehman Russes. One was a Punisher and the other one was a Plasmocutioner. Plasmocutioner had plasma cannons all the way around. The Punisher didn't have any sponsons. I can't remember if I had anything else. I think that was it. I think that was the list. And yeah, it did very well. We unfortunately rolled up the scouring, which was both good and bad for me. Bad for me in that I couldn't score any points while being my Blumenzode. It made me have to play the table against demons, which was actually a bit scary. You know, if you ever got to trap me in combat and stop me from falling back, it was going to get pretty nasty. But good for me in that I was able to sit back in kind of a hammer and anvil deployment. And all my big stuff, my three battle tanks, pretty much survived the whole game and were pretty relevant.
Yeah.
I like it. Very good time. Can't wait to play some more, man.
And you're playing as demons? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I was playing as demons. He had the unkillable Lord of Change and the gated Bloodthirster and a lot of the good stuff. He also had Bellicor as well, so he had three big Griblies and then a bunch of little guys, a bunch of Demonettes and Bloodletters and such.
That's a fairly common archetype. It's like you've got that or, you know, a bunch of smalls stuff. So it's okay. So it sounds like a really good test.
It was a pretty good test. I think I was a little bit favored because of the mission. Well, the mission just meant I got to shoot him a lot before his big stuff connected. And that order, like I said, I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, there is a Prefectus order that a Commissar or Lord Solar can issue that turns them into infiltrators. And essentially, like, my three battle tanks sat behind the Bulgrin, and I put that order on the Bulgrin. So for like two turns. So the Bulgrin, you could not deep strike flamers onto the Bulgrin. And he had 15 flamers as well. Oh, no, actually, I think he had two units of flamers. Anyway, so he couldn't deep strike and flame or charge the Bulgrin, which meant they were safe, and they meant the battle tanks were safe. And so because of that, and that stuff all stayed together for like three turns before I sent the Bulgrin out after the deep strikes, that was probably what did it for me. I think some demon players might need to look, well, if guard really takes off, it might warp some of the things demons can take. They might need stuff like seekers, like screamers, like flesh hounds, stuff that starts early on the table and that can connect turn one, turn two, pick up a bunch of the guardsmen that'll be used for screens. So the big griblies can arrive from the reserve and get those like six and seven inch charges and come in for that way, because starting the big guys on the table, like, and just having to run at battle tanks feels pretty bad. And hey, I didn't even have a dawn yet. Like, it could get worse.
Well, I was going to mention, we actually are early days in like guard discovery and what's going to be a good list and stuff like that. So, you know, I think what you've got, though, is a pretty good place to start.
Oh, yeah, I just took the stuff I felt like playing. I mean, obviously, some of that stuff is very strong. The finial is very strong.
Yeah, where's the Hydra?
Would you be sad with me if I, in hindsight, I distinctly know that I have a Hydra and two Wyverns. And then at some point, me really not forgetting, not remembering, I snapped off the autocannons and now I have three Wyverns. So I need to find the autocannons and stick them back on or buy a new one.
Yeah, I think you can build it without actually having to commit to one tank or the other.
You totally can, and I totally didn't. So.
No, understood. Yeah, but I think those are good tanks, and we're probably going to see them be used, yeah, especially, well, you know, again, once something gets injected into the ecosystem, what it changes and who knows. But to me, I know there's been a lot of folks out there who have been, they don't feel like the guard is going to be as strong as they want it to be. And I'm not feeling that way.
Yeah, me either. I think their good stuff is very good. And I think they have a lot more good stuff than they had before. But the thing is, a lot of their power is coming from just having good data sheets now. Like much of the rest of 9th edition codexes, most of the guard players are used to having much more of a combo-based play style. Like, here is a thing, I'm going to give them four buffs, like Bulgrin used to, like tank commanders can. You know, here is a tank commander. It's going to receive two psychic powers, three CP and stratagems, and an order. And I've bought it a relic and a warlord trait. You know, here's my Demolisher tank commander. And now you just have a tank commander with a thing, and you can give them a relic or warlord trait if you like. They can't receive orders anymore. But I still think, you know, the power of the data sheets is really, really quite strong. Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of power there, but it's changed its shape for people. And some people will find it harder to come by that power, and some people find it much easier.
Yeah. Our episode is going to be slightly shorter this week because we're pressed for time. But next week, going to bring the hobby segment back. I want to talk about how to paint camouflage on things like fatigues and on tanks.
I hope Red's here, because I think Red needs to give the breakdown for how he made all the green stuff cloaks and stuff for his Tanith units. I feel that's the thing people need to
Red's
hear.
Red's been out on assignment for work. That's why he hasn't been anywhere near a computer to be able to hang out with us. Hopefully that changes for them as we get closer to the end of the year.
Well, yeah, hopefully they'll let him home for Christmas, you know, and thereby to his FTN family.
By proxy, yeah, us here to talk about cloaks. But we can talk about like some squad markings and camo on and different types of camo and maybe how to do like some jungle bases and that kind of stuff. You know, the important things.
The important things. How the Ogre Moor tribes coming along there, Tanya? You painting up anything juicy? I had a little foray back into fantasy recently. Well, and by foray, I went through all the a moving house, and I went through all the old fantasy bits and pieces I've still got. And I found a bits bag of Ogre bits, and I kind of went through them nostalgically for like exactly 7 minutes. Single tear rolling down my cheek.
So I haven't been painting that much lately, so I kind of pledged to myself that by the end of December I would finish a bunch of stuff. So it's some Night Haunt stuff and it's some Ogre stuff. So I just finished painting 4 Iron Guts because they're really good in this new battle tome. So I finished them up and I took the Ogres out for a spin last Saturday. And they did really, really good. I brought Kragnos as well.
There he is.
Yeah, and so he does against monsters a crazy amount of damage. Well, potentially a crazy amount of damage in the charge phase. And I was playing against the Sons of Bayomet. It's the first time I'd ever played against them. And I charged Kragnos into King Broad, and I did like 30 mortal wounds to him on the charge. And I was like, I rolled it and I was like, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. This is so bad for you. And my opponent's a sweetheart. And she's like, well, what is it? What is it? And I was like, 30 mortal wounds. And she's like, I guess he's down to 10 wounds then. And I was like, oh, wait. There's more. Now these Mournfang are going to charge in too, because why not? Yeah. So that was fun.
No mercy.
No mercy. Yeah.
Man, what a showdown though. Kragnos and Broad. Like, that's just some beautiful world building stuff right there.
Yeah, two like major destruction armies duke it out for, you know, ultimate supremacy. And yeah, the Ogres came out on top, so Kragnos was happy.
Yeah, well, more to come on all that. Folks, I appreciate y'all hanging out with us this episode, and we will be back next week. Hopefully this gets out on time. I really apologize for things being a little bit delayed these last couple of weeks, but we should be back on track. And don't forget to like, share, subscribe, leave some 5-star reviews.
Buy a t-shirt.
I can get a t-shirt.
Absolutely buy a t-shirt.
We'll see y'all next week.
See you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.